You're listening to the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse at bellydancegeek.com. Welcome to episode number 40 of the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse. I am actually recording this from the United States' oldest inn, the Beekman Arms in Rhinecliff, New York. So if there's anybody up here on the Hudson Valley listening in, hello. I'm nearby, but I'm doing some stuff for my day job, so unfortunately I don't get to see any dancing, but I just thought I would send a little shout out to you ladies, and also gentlemen. So the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse is a place where dancers can get together and geek out on all of those things that are hard to get in classes and on DVDs. If you need help with the what, so things like moves and combos and choreographies, it's really easy to find resources. But if you're looking for information about the why and the how, so things like culture, business, musicality, ethics, that can be a little bit harder to find. So every month I interview a different guest expert on a different topic, and we always have plenty of time for question and answer so you can geek out too. So if you think that knowledge and creativity go together like chocolate and peanut butter, you are in the right place. My guest tonight is Roberto Mejia, who began studying Roxel Charqui at the age of 15 when he discovered his love for the rich movement vocabulary, music, and history of the dance, and the people from which it originates. A decade later, he continues his studies in Roxel Charqui, as well as a rigorous education in numerous styles of folk dances from Turkey, North Africa, and the Middle East. Roberto's passion for dance research took him to Cairo in 2015, and plans are in the works for future trips to Egypt and other countries for further on-site research. You can check him out on Facebook at facebook.com/robertodances. That's R-O-B-E-R-T-O. D-A-N-C-E-S. So welcome, Roberto.
Hi, everyone. How are you all doing?
I am so happy to have you with us.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So before we get into the meat of today's interview, can you tell us a little bit about how you got started in Oriental dance?
Absolutely. So as my short bio mentioned, I started when I was 15. I stumbled across Roxel Charqui or belly dance because I grew up in a Colombian household, and we listened to Shakira, and this is like every, I always laugh because everyone's like, oh, how did you get into dance? And I'm like, well, Shakira, and it's like the, you know, tale of old time at this point. but she has one song in particular where she draws from her Lebanese roots, and not a lot of people realize that she actually is half Lebanese, and learned social dancing from her family, particularly her grandmother. She has one song in particular in English, it's Eyes Like Yours. So that was one of my favorite songs growing up as a kid, and I, when YouTube came around, I was able to find the video. And I fell in love with, you know, I'd fallen in love with like the music, and I saw the dancing in the video. And so I started researching the music before the dance. So I really liked the energy of Arabic music because it resonated with me as a Hispanic or Latino. It sounded very familiar to, like, my childhood in terms of just, like, how soulful and passionate, you know, passion-filled it is. And then after the music came the dance, and I spent 3 years, quote-unquote, teaching myself or just kind of imitating, you know, whatever I could find. I would go to see live dancers, and watched what they were doing, and then I found my first teacher shortly after, and I actually believe she is listening right now. Hi, Shiraz. And from then on out, it's been quite the love affair that I've had with dance. And it was my first dance, so I always joke with everyone. I'm like, I don't even know how to salsa or cumbia or anything like that. Middle Eastern dance was my first dance.
Awesome. And can you tell us what prompted you to get more into dance research?
So I, again, was my first teacher was Shiraz, who was originally from the Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland area. And she and I would spend a lot of time together, talking about dance. I would go with her to her performances, and I would spend time with the people that would go to the hookah lounge and the Middle Eastern restaurants and the Turkish restaurants. And I really became fascinated with the dance as a cultural in a cultural like a social context, because again, that was pretty much like my first introduction to it. Like my first way of learning it was imitating, and going and watching. And so I think it for me it just kind of resonated, going to these places and seeing more of it and getting to sit down and talk with them. And then talking to Shiraz, who at the time was getting her bachelor's degree in anthropology with a concentration in Arab and Islamic studies. So I really became fascinated, as I said, with it as a social aspect. And then from then on, in my own days of college, I would use the school library to check out books and really kind of start to read up on dance ethnology and dance history, so on and so forth. So it kind of just came as a natural thing. I never considered myself much of an academic when I was younger. I didn't particularly enjoy doing research, but I think that was because I didn't really have anything that I loved. And so I've still maintained a pretty strong relationship with Shiraz, as well as many other instructors and dance researchers. And I find myself drawn to people who take an interest in dance research and dance ethnology. So I was really excited to be able to talk about what I've found, and to share it with others. So that's it in a nutshell. It goes a lot further than that, but again, we only have so much time.
Excellent. Well, our topic for tonight is the history of men in belly dance. So, why don't we start with some of the men's dancing traditions that exist in the Middle East and North Africa? Can you tell us about a few of those?
Sure. So, as most people who come to dance start off with Egyptian dance or Egyptian folk dances, I don't think as much as people say, oh, I've seen a male belly dancer, or everyone that I know is familiar with someone like Tito, and so there's that aspect. So the social kind of Sharky dancing that people do, and then of course, we have Tahtib, which is the men's martial art, which then is incorporated into theatrical dance styles, to showcase that martial arts in Egypt. The Rheda troupe used it. You can see it, like when I was in Cairo, we would see it on the boats at the beginning of the Saidi piece for a dancer's number. So Egypt has quite a few styles of men's dances, which actually kind of which start to which intersect with a lot of the women's dances. So they are they I mean they do still maintain the gender segregation, but they all have kind of like their own flair, their own little bit of styling. It's not uncommon to see men dancing in Egypt, for example, at parties, and so that's really exciting. And there's also Turkey. So many people know that the Zenes, which are the male dancers, are really becoming popular again. And that has to do with Turkey wanting to kind of cash out on their, to take advantage of their Ottoman past, And zenes were a very important part of their past in terms of the arts, especially with dance. So you have these male dancers that are, you know, these men that are coming out that are, you know, practicing 2.5, 3 hours a day, and getting, you know, jobs in very touristy areas and bringing back that tradition of male dancers. And then, of course, the Roma, who have, you know, the men dancing, the social dancing. So it's, you know, it's, there are definitely many, many types of dancing that men do. And I think when we get into, like, the myths and misconceptions, we'll definitely get to talk about how it's not uncommon for men to do a lot of the same dances that women do, just in different ways and different venues, so to speak. But yeah, I mean, the Egypt and Turkey are my two main focuses. I do also study a lot of Arabian Peninsula dances, so I am familiar, and then mostly from an expat point of view. So my local Middle Eastern restaurants and shisha bars are very heavy on Saudi Arabian, Kuwaiti men, because we do have large populations of international students at the University of Pennsylvania and Drexel University in Philadelphia. And so I've had the pleasure of getting to watch them, and they have, you know, their Khaliji dances that they get up and do with one another. So those are just some of the main ones that I focus on. Of course, I'm learning more and more every day and every year. So, you know, there's so much more to explore. So I could never consider myself to be the ultimate source of that. But so those are, like, the ones that I really love to focus on: Turkey, you know, the Arab Peninsula, and Egypt. And then, of course, I mentioned I was in Egypt and got to see lots of fabulous dancing from men. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, there were a couple of styles of dance that you've mentioned that I'm not sure that all of our listeners will recognize. So you mentioned Tertib.
Sure.
You mentioned,
yes,
the Zenne, the people. The Roma, also a people, and Khaliji dance. Can you tell us a little,
yes,
bit about what these things are, their context, maybe what they look like?
Sure.
Especially in the context of male dancers?
Absolutely. So Tahtib is, as I mentioned, a martial art from Egypt, and it is from the south of Egypt, the Sa'id region, and it is performed by the men of this region, where they wear their very long galabeyas, which are, for those who aren't familiar with the terminology, galabeya, which is very, looks like what would, you know, a woman would wear in the United, or, you know, in the West, a dress, but is actually a traditional men's styling due to the heat over there. And that's, you know, that's their style of dress. They're still very traditional, very rural there. And they carry around they have their, what are they called, asaya, which just means stick. And they do a form of martial arts where, in my experience, I've only seen two men do it. Maybe other men have done it, you know, in larger groups. I'm not 100% sure. But in my experience, I've watched two men do tahtib. And what that is, you know, it's a martial arts. It's a way of, you know, preparing yourself, you know, with strength. It's very proud. And they use their asaya to fight. And these aren't, you know, these aren't like the little like canes that we see today with the crooks and everything. Like, these are very large asaya, which are about 6 feet long usually. And, you know, these are no joke. And so from Tahtib, we have what we consider to be the cane dances, or the Sa'idi dancing, with the, you know, the taking from, you know, the twirling of the asaya in the hand, you know, bringing the asaya around the head, you know, circular motion around the head, dancing with two or more asaya. So, for example, I've seen, I believe it was Tito, dance with four asaya at the same time on a stage,
wow.
Which it's, yeah, it was pretty, it was incredibly impressive. And so we see a lot of women dancing with the asaya now, as more of a theatrical version of, a more theatrical feminine version of tahtib. And I have heard, one of the things that I like to talk about is I have heard different people say, describe this, you know, more feminine, lighter version of asaya as kind of making fun of Saidi men. I've heard both making fun of them and then also not making fun of them, so more of an imitation. I tend to lean toward the idea of more of an imitation versus a making fun of, and that in, you know, but again, I've heard Egyptians say, you know, oh, they're just making fun of them. You know, I don't necessarily like to say one or the other because of gender politics, especially in Egypt. I don't particularly like to, you know, advocate for non-Egyptian women to say, oh, yeah, I'm making fun of them because, you know, God forbid they come across a man and say, oh, I'm making fun of you, and that doesn't go over well. So it's more, in my opinion, more of an imitation rather than making fun of them. So, yeah, that's tahtib, which goes into arcane dances that we see nowadays with, as I mentioned, the crook, very pretty, you know, asaya, very pretty canes with jewels and little bits of dangling here and there. So it's a very, believe it or not, for those who have never done it, it's actually quite intense. And there are lots of amazing teachers in the United States to learn from. One of my personal favorites to learn from is Karim Nagy, who is an Egyptian living in the Boston area. And he travels throughout the country teaching dance of Egypt and the Arab-speaking world, or the Arabic-speaking world, as well as music and rhythms. So he's a really great teacher to take from for tahtib styling and dancing with the asaya. But yeah, so, and then, do you have any questions?
I think that covers it well for me, but we may take some questions from our listeners near the end. Folks,
okay.
If you want to ask any questions about tahtib, jot those down now so you can remember to ask them later.
Yes. So on to the zene from Turkey, which again I mentioned is a group of men that I particularly have spent a lot of time researching and have actually been called myself. So that was an interesting day because up until that point I'd only ever really heard other people saying it, but I've never been called it myself. So as I mentioned, the zene are the dancing, you know, the dancing men of Turkey. As I did mention, they are making a comeback in Turkey because Turkey is really investing a lot of its resources into promoting its Ottoman past. And so really, you know, really tapping into the old arts that were found throughout the Ottoman Empire, especially in Turkey. And dancers are a very large part of that artistic past, especially male dancers. And I think a lot of people don't realize that they played such a big part in Egypt, or excuse me, not in Egypt, in Turkey. With their dancing, because again, we, you know, from a Western point of view, many times when people come into this dance for the first time, you know, in our country, it's viewed as, you know, a women's dance. It's viewed as like a sisterhood. You know, you have a lot of the use of the word goddess, which I'm not knocking. I would just want to make that clear, just kind of, I think, where people's understanding of this dance comes from when they don't live in that culture. And so it is very, it's very normal to see male dancers, and there are quite a few Turkish dancers on the workshop circuit right now that do teach traditional Turkish dances, as well as their own fusion-y stage, you know, stage catered stylings. And they have a very, very unique style of dance from Egyptian dance. A lot of Zenes have taken that on versus the old school Turkish stylings. And so it's very, very pop locky. But they are using kind of like Turkish style Egyptian music. So it's very interesting to see how that has, how they've progressed in their growth and coming back into this scene. So as I mentioned, you know, it's not uncommon to my, hopefully my point, not uncommon at all to see male dancers in Turkey, and in Turkish history. You know, we're talking about, you know, younger men who looked at, or, you know, who dressed in kind of a very, in a very non-gender conforming way to entertain the, you know, the soldiers, to entertain royalty, and really, you know, ultimately were banned because of the uproar, the fighting that would happen over these male dancers. And, you know, again, it's kind of funny. It's like, oh, you know, they weren't banned necessarily because it was wrong. They were banned because they were so adored. And so I always find that very, you know, very fascinating, because it just goes to show, again, how important male dancers are in the context of dance, especially in Turkey and the Middle East. So anyone that ever gets the chance to go over to Turkey, I definitely recommend going to see one of the shows to kind of experience that, you know, renewal, that rebirth of this interest in male dancers, and not just, you know, female dancers, who are also lovely, of course.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, for folks who have done some digging into, you know, the history of dancers in Turkey, you know, a lot of us have run across the term, you know, Kürçük. Is this the same as Zenit, or is it?
I have heard it used interchangeably. Again, I've as I said, I was called a Zeni once, but I've also been called a Kürçük, and these were all by Turkish men. My understanding and how I've heard it used, I've always heard Kürçük being used as an older term, and from more of a research perspective, and then Zeni being used more frequently now. But then again, as I said, you know, I had a young man call me a Kürçük one time. So in my mind, that would say to me, oh, maybe it's just an interchangeable kind of way of saying a male dancer. It could be from, you know, different parts of Turkey refer to male dancers as Zenes, and different parts of Turkey refer to them as Kürçük. I'm not 100% sure. It's not, to me, it doesn't seem as black and white as some might think. It seems more gray. But I have definitely absolutely heard and used the word Kürçük to refer to male dancers from Turkey.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, you also mentioned Romani men dancing. Can you tell us a little bit about that tradition?
Absolutely. So much like Egypt, where social dancing is a very big part of life, and in Turkey, the Roma are no stranger to social dancing themselves. If you look up the, you know, if you go to YouTube and you look up in English, you know, Roma boys dancing Turkey, you will get, I mean, an absolutely, for me, it's a treasure chest of videos of Roma men and boys dancing. And of course, the Roma are famous for their 9/8. You know, their 9/8, their Roma 9/8, you know, their Karşılama, their Şefeteli. And you will get to see these in a very earthy, you know, a very earthy, proud, solid way of dancing with Roma men and boys. Also, I've seen a lot of videos of modern day Romani and Roma boys speeding things up, almost looking, you know, kind of like bouncing, a lot more bouncing off of the ground. Not necessarily much stronger, but more erect dancing. So that's been very interesting. And that also, you know, unfortunately, I was supposed to go to Turkey this May, but missed that opportunity due to security reasons. But that was one of the things that I was hoping to go and see, was the use of, you know, the 9/8, the Şefeteli in modern music being danced to by younger generations. Because a lot of older generations, you see them taking their grand old time, really, really feeling that music, enjoying it. And then with the newer generations, you see a lot faster movements. You know, what comes to mind when I think of it is almost like a, you know, they're almost like taking it to a very balletic kind of staging, but in a social context still. So definitely the Roma are not at all, you know, shy to dance. In my experience, I have worked in a Turkish restaurant in the past, and had plenty of opportunities to dance with Turkish men, including Roma men. And when that 9/8 comes on or that Şefeteli, you know, I ultimately would end up in the corner because I wanted to watch them, and B, because they would take over that floor, and they loved it, and they loved every minute of it. And so it was really great to see the shared aspects of the dance versus, or as well as the newest aspects of the dance from Roma men, you know, with their music that they know and love so much.
Excellent. Well, you also mentioned Khaliji dance. I know a lot of, you know, belly dancers are familiar with you know, the more female dance forms, which involves a lot of hair tossing and whatnot. But, you know, even just thinking off the top of my head, I can't think of ever having seen a men's dance. Can you tell us more about how men in the Gulf region tend to use dance?
Yes. So as I mentioned, this one is, for me, comes from more of an expat or quote unquote, you know, immigrant community here in the United States. As I mentioned prior to, my context is here in Philadelphia. We have a very large Khaliji population because of the two main universities, those being the University of Pennsylvania and Drexel, which are very heavy on the sciences. And a lot of these students that come over from the Khalij are studying these sciences. And a number of hookah lounges or shisha lounges have popped up. And when I go with my friends to watch their dancing as well as to enjoy our time, the Khaliji music will come on. And the numerous times I have had the pleasure of watching the men get up, so men from Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia mostly, get up and start dancing and have zero qualms. I don't have as much experience here with watching Kuwaiti or Saudi Arabian women, but again, that also comes from that norm of gender segregation that they're very used to. And I have had the opportunity to talk to a couple of the women, and I said, you know, just out of curiosity, why don't you like to get up and dance? And they say, oh, well, the men are dancing right now. And it's, you know, it's their turn, or I don't feel comfortable dancing around them. So again, you know, as we've come to, you know as dancers, that there is a lot of gender segregation coming out of, especially coming out of Saudi Arabia and the Arab Peninsula. And so I've had the pleasure of watching many men get up and dance, and they are some of the funnest dancers that I have ever experienced in my decade of learning about Middle Eastern, North African, and Turkish dances. You know, very, very uninhibited, very joyful. You know, it almost as if they spent all day working or studying or, you know, really just kind of going through life. And as soon as that music comes on, they all get up in their groups and start, you know, dancing to Khaliji style music and doing very small head tosses, more of like a head nod to the very strong, heavy hair tosses that a Khaliji woman would do. And one of my favorites that I have, if anyone can picture this, it looks like they're doing the wave from side to side while they dance across the floor. I'll have to see if I can find video for everyone listening doing that. Just very joyful, you know. I know in the dance community, Saudi Arabians in particular get a very bad name. You know, for whatever reason that is, I'm not 100% sure. But in my experience, when it comes to dancing, you know, it's ecstasy for them. And they really do enjoy themselves and are having a great time, you know, amongst their friends and their family, and are actually very, very open to having people get up and dance with them. I've learned quite a bit of social dancing, which I have then used in more of a staged sort of way from learning from these Saudi Arabian and Kuwaiti men and taking from, you know, what their social dancing is. So I feel very blessed to have that opportunity. And I'm always very sad when it comes to the summertime and they've gone home for, you know, vacation. So I'm a bit of a dry spell right now from missing my Kuwaiti and Saudi friends.
Excellent. Yeah, so we talked about a couple of main traditions. You know, one of the big things that for me helps me make sense out of, you know, any time I'm trying to understand what a dance is, you know, what's its cultural context? You know, something a social dance? Is it a community-based dance? Is it a performance dance? So can you tell us a little bit more about how men dancing plays into these different contexts?
Absolutely. So again, as I mentioned, one of my big focuses as a dance researcher and a dance ethnologist, or an aspiring dance ethnologist ultimately, is social dancing. Because that's how I learned, and that's what I really enjoy going to watch, because of how spur of the moment it can be. You know, you have a room full of people who have been sitting for upwards of 2 hours, you know, smoking shisha and, you know, drinking or not drinking, eating and enjoying each other's company. And then all of a sudden, you know, the music comes on and it's like an explosion. It's completely organic. You know, there's no prior choreography. There's no, you know, there's no camera on them. You know, it's not a dance recital. This is watching dance in a very natural kind of way. And in my experience, this is how I've seen most men's dancing in a very social aspect. You know, in Egypt, in the United States, as well as in a few of the other countries I've been to, non-Middle Eastern countries, and having had the opportunity to watch, you know, immigrant or expat communities in a context of their own. And I really feel that the social context is overlooked, because Western, you know, when we think of belly dance, we think of the woman in her beautiful costume on the stage, possibly with a live band or dancing to canned music, and less so in a social context, for whatever reason. You know, it may be that there really isn't a large, you know, Arabic or Turkish-speaking community in a dancer's vicinity, or they don't know where to go. It, you know, for whatever reason, some people don't quite see how, or have the opportunity or take advantage of the opportunity to see that social dancing. And I think that's a really, really important part of men's dancing, particularly when you're talking about, you know, in a home-based experience, such as in Egypt. You know, while I was in Egypt, I never got the opportunity to see a male Oriental dancer, because it's harder to find that in a public place, you know, due to some of the taboos and the stigmas attached to, you know, males performing dance on stage. However, I did see a lot of the folkloric dances, because those are very prideful. Those are accepted as, you know, appropriate in Cairo. So you see a lot of the tenora, which is the Sufi, you know, the dervish style dancing. You see the tahtim, or men's version of kind of the Saidi dancing with the Asaya. And then, of course, social dancing, which would include Shar'i, as well as the very new style, well, not very new, but the growing in popularity style, like Mahragan, which sounds very hip-hoppy in Egypt, which is very big right now. So I think one of the big things when we're talking about male dancers is to recognize the fact that it's hugely social dancing. You absolutely have, you know, the national folkloric troupes, and their takes on dancing and how men do those dances. And, you know, those are all beautiful. But in my opinion, a lot of the dances are mostly social, and that's how you'll see men doing them.
Excellent. Well, you know, taking a look at the other piece of that, you know, if we look at male performers in particular, you know, how has their role varied in different times and places? Do they tend to, you know, for example, do they tend to be mostly, you know, particular castes of people or families? Are they more common in different countries versus others in different times?
That, I think, is going to depend. You know, one of the things that I've heard over and over again, you know, especially while I was in Cairo, was, you know, oh, I would, you know, talking about their own daughters and their own sons was, you know, I love dancing, but I could never let my family, you know, be a dancer. And So, you know, and that's normal here. You know, it's an art. We love the arts as humans, but at the same time, we realize that it's, you know, it's not a, you know, it doesn't garner a whole lot of, you know, appreciation for oneself. And it's a very difficult art, and I'm sure all of you listening could agree, and you're nodding your heads. And so I think that plays a big part of how it's received in general. You know, it's always going to be, well, let the other person's family do that. Let the other person's daughter or son do that as a profession. In terms of, I really can't say if one country is that quote unquote better than the other in terms of, you know, who, how many people allow their, you know, families to do that, because I don't have the statistics on that. And I'm just taking a guess that it would probably be very hard to get statistics for that because of how we view the dance versus how, you know, the native people of one country view that dance. You know, whether they, what their understanding of that dance is in general, where we may view it as, you know, an art, or we may view it as a research. It's just, for them, it may just be part of life, you know, just kind of something that they do. And so they may not look at it or think about it in the same way that we do. And so it would, in my opinion, be harder to get those numbers. But I digress back to the question. In terms of, you know, what times you'll see it, where you'll see it, you know, social gatherings, birthdays, weddings, you know, circumcision parties, you know, you go to Cairo, and it's not unusual to go to a, you know, a restaurant or, you know, a nightclub and have a dancer, and then have social dancing in the meantime. So it's very festive. It's a lot about, you know, enjoying the moment that you're in with your family or your friends. And then, of course, you have the stage context. You know, we all know the Rata troupe wanting to, you know, to showcase Egypt's folkloric dances, you know, on stages across the world, you know, in Cairo, and showing the world in a, you know, a staged manner. You know, these are our dances. These come from our countries. And, you know, there are also folkloric troupes across, you know, across the Middle East and North Africa and Turkey, showcasing these dances for people. So it definitely varies. You know, again, as I mentioned, I think it's harder to kind of nail down the statistics, but if anyone has those statistics, I would absolutely love to talk to you. So please feel free to email me.
All right. And, you know, one thing that you've talked about is how helpful, you know, watching the dance in a social context has been. Do you have any tips for folks on how to find opportunities?
Absolutely. You know, I love getting to talk to people about that because, as I mentioned, I think it's absolutely paramount that people take advantage of, you know, getting to see these dances in social occasions, because this is where you're going to, you know, see the latest movements, or this is where you're going to hear the latest music. And so, especially people living in cities with large populations of Turkish, Middle Eastern, or North African, you know, expats or immigrants or, you know, visitors or whatever, you know, going to the nightclubs, going to the shisha lounges, going to the Middle Eastern restaurants, and, getting to watch and experience, the natural occurrence of dance. And of course, taking into mind that you are a visitor, that you are, you are an outsider, looking in, and being respectful and mindful of, of any social rules that exist. As I mentioned earlier, with the Saudi women that I know, the Kuwaiti women that I know, they don't enjoy getting up and dancing with the men, because of their own ideas of gender segregation. As a Western woman, you may find that the men are more accepting of you getting up and dancing with them because you're not part of the culture. And that's, again, something that I've experienced a lot of. I've watched my friends. They're like, oh, yeah, it's not a problem. It's not a problem. You're not one of their own. And so they don't have to worry about you necessarily. But then there are men who don't enjoy dancing with women and still maintain that across the board, that form of gender segregation. So it's going to be hit or miss in terms of that. I don't know if any male dancers are listening. It can also be particularly difficult for male dancers to get up, especially if they start doing all their flashy moves. Again, social dancing is not stage dancing. You can shimmy and you can do hip drops, but it's when you start doing your traveling and you start doing your, your really intense combinations that someone says, oh, you're a trained dancer. And if you're a male dancer dancing amongst other men, that can be difficult. Again, that's something that goes across the board in every country. Homosexuality or perceived homosexuality, is taboo no matter where you are. And so keeping in mind that, it might be better to scale back on your dance moves, and really take the time to be mindful of what they're doing and observe what they're doing, you'll learn a lot, and you won't feel as intimidated. When I was a younger dancer, I kind of wanted to bust out everything that I knew. But I learned that, it caused problems, and that it made me, it made me a target for people who may not be the fondest of, again, homosexuality or perceived homosexuality. Other social dancing opportunities, if you're at a festival and you have, those party nights and you have native dancers from Turkey or Egypt, I know that there's going to be I don't know if it's a festival, I know it's a weekend of workshops up in New York with Iraqi dancing, I believe in September, that might be a great place to see some social Iraqi dancing. There are a number of ways, to really get that opportunity. Live music is by far the best experience. For those of you living in the Washington, D.C. area, as well as the New York area, I hope you realize that you have amazing live music scenes. And I would be happy to give you a list of those places in a separate email or at a different time for you to be able to experience those places, with live musicians and the latest music, the old schools, you'll hear your own Kusum, you'll hear everything that's been played in the past, and then you get to listen to the new music as well, and you get to watch the social dancing, and possibly partake in it.
All right. Well, one thing that you touched on, was the lack of acceptance of homosexuality or perceived homosexuality, and that seems like a really good segue into some of the other things that you and I have talked about presenting in this call. So why don't we move on to some of the myths and misconceptions about male dancers. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So the largest myth and misconception is that men do not dance. That is 150% false. And when I say that men do not dance, I mean Western men, I mean Middle Eastern men, I mean Turkish men, I mean North African men. Men dance no matter where you are. It's just that sometimes we do not have access, or, you know, as women, women do not have access to these spaces where they find male dancers, or spaces have been created in the United States where it is largely women. The reason that I was self-taught for the first 3 years is because every dance teacher that I reached out to in my area for 3 years kindly rejected me and said that I only teach women, because of this perception of in the West that this is a women's dance, that this is, you know, a sisterhood, you know, goddess dancing, etc. But yes, men absolutely do dance. Men are professional dancers. Men are amateur dancers. Men dance in their homes. Men dance at parties. Men dance, you know, when they're traveling abroad. They dance. And that is the, you know, debunk the myth right here, right now. And, you know, I think one of the greatest things about the internet and YouTube and Instagram is that, you know, we're starting to really get to see inside the lives of, you know, of native dancers. One of my favorite things to do, quite honestly, is to go on Snapchat and have my friends send me little clips of them at their parties. You know, in countries that otherwise we wouldn't really have access to their lives. You know, countries like Saudi Arabia, where we, you know, as foreigners, we need to have, you know, visas, the proper, you know, the proper visa, the proper way to get in, a host, a legitimate reason, you know, a background check, et cetera, et cetera. And with social media, we have access into those worlds, and we are given access to that world. It's not that we take it, we are given it. And that goes for men's dancing. Another myth and misconception is that all male dancers are gay. That's false. I know quite a few dancers who do not identify as gay or bisexual, and consider themselves to be very much so heterosexual. Does that necessarily, you know, does that mean that they aren't perceived as homosexual? Absolutely not. When I was in Cairo, and for those of you who have been, you've seen this phenomenon, and it even blew my mind and I knew about it. You know, it's very common to see men walking down the street holding hands, you know, hugging each other, being very affectionate. I remember watching a man stand outside the local pharmacy from my hotel in Cairo, waiting for his friend. And as soon as his friend came out, they grabbed hands and walked down the street. And that's normal, again, because of the gender segregation. You know, men and women, you know, not it, you know, it being particularly frowned on by men and women showing affection. But however, when friends of mine who owned a shop in Cairo, their neighboring shop found out that I was a male dancer, that was when my sexuality was brought into question. You know, nothing else really brought my sexuality into question. Had I found a friend, I could have walked down the street holding his hand, because it would have been normal and, you know, being affectionate with him. But being a male dancer was kind of that, you know, that outing for me, which was scary, but fortunately I did have my friends who own their shop step up and say, you know, if anyone tries to do anything to you or anyone tries to, you know, say anything or hurt you, please let us know. We will take care of it. So that was, you know, that was fantastic. So it does get complicated. You know, it being a dancer does not necessarily make you gay or straight or anything. But there are certain stereotypes that go with it and certain taboos that go along with male dancers, here and abroad. But yeah, that there's absolutely no correlation. Much like the arts, you're probably, you know, like arts in general, you're going to have a higher population of gay men or bisexual men, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're all going to be gay or bisexual. Dear, what other myths or misconceptions have you heard?
Well, I think one thing too that I was told early in my dance career and later learned was false was that belly dance specifically is a female dance, and male dancers in the Middle East do entirely different dances.
Yeah. No, that is definitely not true. Roxasari is a social dance for men, women, children, young, old, you know, across the Middle East and Turkey where it's found. You know, are there certain moves that may be more specific to one gender, one sex, or the other? Absolutely. Are there certain aspects of, are there certain characteristic personality traits that may go with, you know, a dance that, or, you know, a male or female or man or woman dancer when they're dancing? Absolutely. But it is for everyone. And again, going back to, you know, your own understanding of dance, that's quite normal in the West. As I mentioned, you know, it took me 3 years to find my first teacher because I wasn't accepted into classes with all women because those spaces were used as a way to foster community between women and to keep women, you know, feeling like they had a sisterhood and, you know, feeling like they were protected. And when you really think about the boom of, you know, belly dance in the United States, you think about the 60s and 70s when you have a continuously growing feminist movement, you know, liberation of sex and bodies. You know, one of the terms that I, you know, another one I've heard, you know, ecofeminism, and really allowing women to start to feel comfortable with themselves in comparison to, you know, previous generations. And so it's completely understandable. And, you know, I hope that anyone listening doesn't, you know, think me, you know, wrong. I'm not bashing, you know, these movements. I understand how important it is. You know, I've worked as a domestic violence and a rape crisis counselor. And I absolutely agree with the need for spaces that are protective. But I think the problem is, and where I personally draw the line, is when that personal preference starts to turn into fact and is propagated as fact versus just a personal preference. And so, no, you know, I've witnessed men doing shimmies. I've witnessed men doing, you know, hip drops and hip circles and, you know, chest pops and, you know, chest circles and everything. Absolutely, definitely a myth. Again, understandably why it is so widely believed in the West, especially in the United States, though.
Now, when we think about some of the stereotypes that apply to male dancers, do these tend to be consistent everywhere in the world, or are they different in the West versus in the Middle East and North Africa?
I'm trying to think. I think that's going to vary depending on where you are. Yeah, in my experience, the stereotypes are different because there are, as I've seen, you know, people say, oh, he's a male dancer, he's automatically, you know, gay or this or that. I've also heard you know, people say, oh, he's a male dancer, but he's married with kids. You know, he's straight, and, you know, that may just be a beard for that particular dancer. Versus in the West, there may be less of an acceptance for what one personally says about, you know, about themselves or their sexuality, or their gender identity. And more of a kind of, yeah, okay, whatever, like, you know, you say that, but we don't actually believe it. So in my experience, it varies. It changes from person to person, family to family, you know, group of people to group of people, and country to country. And again, those levels of tolerance change with them.
And do you find that these stereotypes only apply to male performers or also to men who dance socially versus in folk dance troupes, et cetera?
My experience is that it applies mostly to Oriental dancers and professional dancers that may do folkloric dances, but do folkloric dances in a soloist, as a soloist. So the solo male dancer, I feel, gets more of the attention than a folkloric troupe or a troupe of male dancers would. But mostly applying to a folkloric group. It was actually funny that you mentioned that. Someone asked me the other day, have you ever seen a troupe of Oriental dancers? And I thought about it, and I was like, no, I never have, actually. I've seen, you know, American tribal style troupes and, you know, ITF and folkloric dance troupes, but I've never actually seen a group of Oriental male dancers. So I would be interested to see that and to see and to listen in on people's conversations and do a little field research there. And, of course, keep their identity safe. But yeah, I feel the male Oriental dancer or the male soloist gets more of the attention than anyone else does, which makes sense. I mean, I think with women it's the same thing. You know, the female Oriental dancer or female soloist gets more of the attention than a group of women, for example. All eyes on them.
And, you know, all of these myths that you've mentioned have, you know, really negative consequences. So what can all of us do to help fight them?
That is actually a really great question. And I really like to, when I'm talking about these myths and misconceptions, keep in mind that, my critique is completely valid of somewhere else, in a human rights sort of way. However, I do draw the line personally in terms of actions that I take. I believe that my actions belong in my own country and in my own culture. Because this is my own context, and these are my own people, and I feel that it is my duty in my own country, versus going into another country and telling someone else what to do, particularly when that art comes from there in general. And I feel that it's important for a country's own people to address it, you know, and to feel empowered that they have that ability. So for American dancers, I think that there a big step has been taken, you know, ever since I started. You know, I have women, female, you know, dancers and, you know, women coming to me all the time saying, oh my gosh, you know, I have a male dancer and, you know, I'm so excited, but I have no idea what I'm doing. You know, as I said, versus, you know, when I first started having teachers turn me away. And so I think steps are being taken in the right direction. I think one of the joys of tribal style dance, whether it be American tribal style or, you know, tribal fusion, is that it's very open to men, women, you know, gender nonconforming, gay, straight, whatever you may identify as. And I feel that that has had a very great effect overall in the dance community. And, you know, when we have these festivals where we have a mix of, you know, traditional folkloric dances or, you know, traditional belly dance mixed in with American tribal style and tribal fusion. And we start to, you know, see more male dancers, even just bringing over, you know, male teachers from other countries, Tito Saif, Mohammed Shaheen, you know, one dancer in the Iraqi weekend that I mentioned before is actually a male dancer from Iraq who was part of the folkloric troupe in Iraq. And so we have definitely come a long way in terms of allowing that to, you know, in terms of diversifying our own groups and allowing men to take it, you know, to be a part of something that they are naturally part of in all other parts of the world, you know, in their home countries where these dances come from. So I applaud, you know, my own country. I'm really proud to see how things have come in the last decade, you know, let alone, you know, the last 40, 50 years. Other things that I feel would benefit, I feel that really taking the time as dancers to get to know the culture. I know that sounds kind of like it splits off from the initial question, but I feel that to really understand an art form, especially like this one, it's incredibly important to be familiar with who the people are that do this on a day-to-day basis, where they come from, you know, what their customs and traditions are, what their histories are, you know, what their politics are, especially the Middle East, because our own media has such a strong bias against the Middle East, North Africa, Turkey, and, you know, Islam and Muslims. And I think it's really important to be critical of those sources and to take our own time to get to know these cultures and these countries and these peoples on our own. You know, I didn't go over to Egypt until 10 years into my dance career, well, 9 years into my dance career. And I had heard things for years that when I went over were either confirmed or debunked, that otherwise I wouldn't have been able to confirm or debunk. You know, even just talking to people, I think it's super important to really take into consideration, you know, their own experiences, and to really listen to them. And I feel that as a group here in the United States, as artists here, that that will do a lot of good in allowing us to expand our minds and to expand what we know and what we think, what we know to be true and what we think we know to be true. And in the end, of course, that'll trickle down and help with gender politics in dance and helping people understand that, hey, a male dancer is completely normal. And even understanding our own gender politics in, you know, the U.S. Working as a dancer in, you know, primarily, you know, heterosexual restaurants and nightclubs, I've had my fair share of, you know, harassment from Americans about, you know, being a male dancer. So it's absolutely important to understand our own, you know, our own politics and our own gender, how we perceive gender, and sexuality to also understand how it's perceived in, you know, a subculture such as dance.
Well, that's a great segue into my next question. You know, so what roles do gender and sexuality play in the dance, whether it's here or in the Middle East?
That is an ongoing question that I continuously ask myself. I mean, it's just such a huge, complex topic. You know, as I mentioned, when I was in Cairo, they were like, "Oh, you're a male dancer, you must be gay." I talked to a famed choreographer when I was in Cairo, and bringing up male dancers, soloists doing Oriental, she kind of had this scoff in her voice. But at the same time, when I really sat there and listened to her, I felt like she was almost trained to say that and accustomed to saying that, and that in reality, when I would listen to her, she had nothing but lovely things to say about some of the soloist male dancers that she knew. Again, coming with that perceived, sexuality, homosexuality being true or perceived. Again, gender segregation plays a huge part in dance in the Middle East, North Africa, and Turkey. If you go on YouTube, you'll see a lot of really great videos where they're considered, I believe I heard recently, they're considered shabby weddings, where families don't have enough money for a venue, so they put up, a sheet on a street, and they separate the men and the women, and you'll see the women dancing with their own, their own sisters and mothers and cousins. And you see the men dancing with their own brothers and fathers and cousins and everyone. And so in that aspect, you see how much gender plays into that setup and that setting. In terms of stage dancing, I've noticed I don't know if I could say change. Obviously, I'm only 25 years old. I wasn't around when the Raider Troupe was first founded. So I couldn't say, for sure if it was or wasn't this way. But I've noticed a lot of artistic expression, in modern soloist dancers, kind of, taking a different turn. Doing movements that in a way that may be more, traditionally considered, feminine, or, female dancers doing dances or, a style of dance or a dance movement that may be considered more masculine. And that's across the board. That's in the United States. That's in, other countries. I think that's pretty fun. I think that's exciting to see people, stepping outside of, these boxes. Again, though, I don't know if that's new or not. That's something I would love to sit down with, older dancers and really get to talk to them about. So I can't answer that one for sure. But from what I've seen, it's a great little change in things.
And how do cultures' views on gender and sexuality affect how or whether any given man dances?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
So, if you look at any given culture, how does that one culture's views on gender and sexuality affect who can dance and how they do it?
Absolutely. When you look at our culture, for example, and you see a male belly dancer, and I've heard this before, wow, you move your hips like a woman, or, you know, your arms are so graceful like a woman's, or, you know, whatever it is. And I've heard that quite a few times in my time as a dancer, especially dancing in public. And for me, I look at my movements and I'm like, oh, well, that's normal. And even as a Latino, that's quite normal. Latin dance, it's not uncommon for men to move their hips in a specific way. What would be considered here a very feminine way. And so for me, it took a lot of time to kind of to know, like, what are they talking about? And I don't understand how that's any different. And then I had to, you know, really think about, like, okay, well, watching, you know, American men dance that may not come from a culture, you know, a Latin or, even an African or African-American or Caribbean culture or Middle Eastern culture, what does their body look like when they're dancing, if they dance at all? And their own expectations of a dancing body comes from their own expectations as a non-dancing body. Not moving their bodies in certain ways or not allowing them to move in certain ways, lacking a use of the hips when they're dancing, not graceful, but just not very feminine looking arms or hands. And so I think within our own culture, the norm being for men to be very masculine is then interpreted and used to project how other bodies should or shouldn't move. For women, it's okay for them to, I wouldn't say it's okay. It's normal for them to be able to move their hips like that. I can't tell you how many times, well, I'm a guy, I can't do that. And I'm like, and I'm not a guy. I identify as a man and I can move my hips like this. Why can't you? Why? That doesn't mean you can't. But again, it's how their own non-dancing body is perceived. And going back to women, yes, they can, doesn't necessarily mean they should for some people, which you then start talking about, women's bodies being covered and not necessarily just across the Middle East, even in the United States, women being told, oh, you need to be more modest. And so our own ideas of gender and sexuality and sex then start to play into that dance, especially a dance that goes against our own ideas of dance over here.
That really has me thinking because, back in the early AMCAB days, so especially in like the mid-60s to the mid-70s, there were several really prominent male dancers. And, of the footage that I've seen of them from that era, I've noticed that a lot of them really incorporated a lot of elements that to me look a lot like flamenco. And now that's got me wondering how much of that is, let's take a very rhythmically based movement vocabulary that blends nicely with belly dance, but that Americans specifically associate with machismo, that Americans see as being very masculine.
You mentioned flamenco?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know I would be the appropriate person to answer that question. My familiarity with flamenco is incredibly limited. However, in a general way, I would not be surprised if that were the case. I know another male dancer that I'm familiar with who is part of the vintage Oriental generation, Omar, has his own very unique style of dance. as well as costuming that has made it in that has made it that has made it appropriate. Well, I should say, he's had better luck getting into public places to dance because of it being very masculine. Is that how he was taught to dance? I'm going to assume no, having talked to him and knowing his own dance education past. So for me, it sounds like he absolutely took inspiration from other styles and included it in his own. So I would not be surprised at all if male dancers in the United States from the Vintage Oriental, you know, era did that. And to be quite honest, that in general is not uncommon even today. I feel that men have a lot more leeway and ability to experiment than women do in costuming, in dance styling, very much less boxed in and expected to do certain things. You know, in my own experience, you know, there are certain things that people that I have done that on another dancer, I've heard women say, oh, she shouldn't do that. But then for me, I do it. And they're like, oh my God, that's so amazing. And I'm like, you know, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But, you know, when you think about it, it does. Because, you know, for better or for worse, this is a type of dance in the West where, you know, we expect women to really follow suit and follow order and to, you know, not expand out as much. And so it's always lovely when I see a dancer that does, you know, with her own training, with great training, then expand out and do her own thing. Because it's very liberating. Which is a great aspect of dance.
All right. Well, I'd like to take a step in a slightly different direction and talk about the belly dance community, specifically in the U.S. or in Western countries. So, you know, for you, what's it like being a male performer in a Western dance community where most of your colleagues are female?
It's wonderful. I love you all so much. And you're incredibly supportive. to be honest, I do love our community. I think we have a very strong community. Of course, every community has its own problems. But this is an art that you know, when you don't grow up in that culture and you take the time to really learn about that culture and then how that influences the dance and how the dance influences the culture, you really create a very unique community that kind of has its own language. You know, my ex, I always joke, he became very familiar with, you know, dance lingo and always being around my friends and my dance colleagues. And I always joke that, you know, he was a better critic of dance than I was. You know, we'd sit there and he would say, oh, wow, you know, that wasn't executed that wonderfully. And I would just look at him and be like, wow, you've learned a lot. But it's because it becomes its own language. And so I think we have a great community here. My one thing that I hope that people who are listening and in general, my one thing that I hope that people take from this as I mentioned earlier, is, again, really taking an interest in, you know, the people that these dances belong to. You know, I know there's a lot of talk about, you know, cultural appropriation and, you know, stealing from cultures and not paying, you know, tribute to, you know, what they've given and just ignoring the you know, the history. And I think that I agree. I think that is definitely a problem. in the dance community in the West. And I would love to see more dancers taking a genuine interest in the culture because it's an incredibly important part of this dance. It's important to know where it's coming from, who it's coming from, how that dance is affected by the region that it comes from. What are the politics, the religion of that region? How does that affect the dance? What effect does the dance have on that politic, those politics or those, excuse me, those religions or spiritualities? It's not enough to learn the vocabulary. Because that vocabulary comes from the culture and from the language. And so I always encourage people to, to want to learn more. And I understand that, again, that comes from, our country's own relationship with the Middle East, and, Islam and Muslims. And I recognize that. And so I always encourage, I do hear quite a bit of, Islamophobia in the dance community. I do hear quite a bit of, it's so wrong that they do this, so wrong that they do that. I've heard dancers, unfortunately, with the recent shooting in Orlando, Muslims and Arabs and, et cetera, hate gays and, blah, blah, blah. And I, took the time to say, well, as my own experience as a male dancer in the West and as a gay man living in the West, I've experienced significantly more homophobia from my own people than I have from Muslims or practitioners of Islam or Arabs. So just understanding that, bad things happen across all cultures and all religions and, all peoples. And that pointing fingers in one direction and covering up, your own culture's problems doesn't help anything, and is not very useful. And that we know it affects your art. You love this art and you want to do the best that you can do. And I think it's important to really, challenge your own, growing up what you grew up knowing. Nadira?
Ah, there you are.
Oh. You're cutting in now.
For you.
I'm sorry?
I can't. If there's anybody listening on the webcast, can you tell me if you can hear me okay? I
Okay,
can
I
type that
can
in the
hear you
little
now.
box, right? Okay, there we
I
go.
can.
Yeah.
It was you or me, but would you mind repeating what you said, starting with it affects your art?
I'm sorry, what?
I had trouble hearing you earlier. And the last thing I heard was it affects your art.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think when we don't take the time to challenge our own beliefs, that it affects our art. Because of it, we all know these dances come from areas of the world that the relationships between our own countries and our own people aren't always the greatest. And that a lot of those misconceptions are continuously used instead of challenged. Are there absolutely, are there valid critiques, of Middle Eastern or Western culture and how we handle certain things? Absolutely. But I think it's important for people to really be able to sit down and to think about those things and to say, I need to find this answer out for myself. I need to take this what I've learned, good and bad. That's not just, something that you may consider bad. When people say, oh, this is a goddess dance, and there's research that's been done on that. I don't follow that research necessarily. It's not my personal interest. Is it necessarily a bad thing? Absolutely not. But is it necessarily correct? Again, that's something that we need to find out for ourselves, and especially when it comes to negative things. Really sitting down with people and listening to them, really going to see how their lives are versus just turning on the TV and taking in what we see, and what we hear and what we're told. And I think that's incredibly important when it comes to our dance because of where these dances come from, and the people that they come from. And so, being able to really open your mind and take the time to, learn about these cultures and these peoples will make you a better dancer, will make you a more open-minded dancer, across the board, for everyone, for myself, for my colleagues, for everyone. And I think that that's a process of learning that will continue on for a very long time, and that it should be a continuous, project within oneself.
Right. Now, you've talked a little bit about your trouble finding teachers who are willing to teach male students. And I think that, for a lot of teachers who limit their classes to women only, a lot of that comes from a desire to be seen as. One angle I understand that because in the, what's that?
I'm sorry, what did you say it was the due to and then wanting to maintain, what was it?
What I meant was that a lot of teachers who limit their classes to women only are mostly concerned about making sure that the classroom environment feels safe for their female students. Do you have any suggestions on what teachers can do to make sure that male students feel welcome without sacrificing the aspect of a dance?
Yeah, absolutely. As I mentioned, though, I definitely, I totally understand why teachers do that, and I applaud people that create safe spaces, for people that may, in their daily lives, not have those safe spaces. And so, when it comes to dance, I absolutely understand that, women are coming in crop tops, and yoga pants, and have their bodies exposed in ways that they may not throughout the day, and are getting in touch with their bodies in ways that they don't typically do. And so to bring in a man who, belongs to a group of people in our country, that do prey on women. Not all, of course, but goes without being said that it's still an issue. I think that that's a valid thing. So for teachers that do want to maintain that safe space, but still allow male dancers, their right to dance, even as the minority, which for men never happens. So wow, imagine that. talking to the female students, as a woman, I'm sure that women can pick out the guy that wants to come in and actually learn how to dance versus the one who wants to come in and be a creeper. I don't put it past any teacher to know the difference. I believe that they are very well aware of a man's intentions. And so the next step for that is to be able to talk to their female students and say, hey guys, or hey ladies, how do you feel about this? Because that's what I've experienced in my own dance circles. My teacher's saying, ladies, how do you feel about Roberto joining us? And to this day, when the teachers ask, I still have yet to be turned away from a dance class or, you know, a dance group. But I think that that is still an important thing to do, is to be able to ask everyone, how do you feel about this? You know, and if there's a certain person in the class that says, well, I don't really feel comfortable with it, you know, being able to ask them and say, okay, well, you know, why is that? And being able to talk to people. Having talked to other dance teachers that have done this, I did, from a secondary, you know, a secondary source, have the conversation about the one time, you know, a teacher asking her students, you know, well, why don't you feel comfortable with, or, you know, do you feel comfortable with this? And the one teacher or one person saying, no, I don't feel comfortable with it, and really couldn't give, like, kept using excuses that weren't going to be an issue with a male student. And the teacher decided, well, you know, I don't agree with you. I know that this isn't going to be an issue. I hope you'll stay, but I want you to know that, you know, you seem to be the only one that feels this way, and so I'm going to invite them in. I hope that you'll change your mind. And ultimately, that person did change their mind, so that was nice. Again, not my experience, but, you know, one of my own teachers having had that experience. So I think, you know, it's a bit of a juggling act. It definitely takes some open communication, but again, I think, you know, they get past the first, you know, the first check, you know, you realize, hey, they're not going to be that creeper, then I don't think there should be any issue. So, yeah.
And I think, you know, you mentioned that a pretty important thing. You know, in my own classes, is I ask, you know, students who identify as male to contact me first before they sign up. And then I just ask them a couple of questions about their interest. And if they, you know, again, that kind of, I can't really put my finger on it. Quality seems to be the distinction. You know, I've had, you know, one person who inquired, who said, oh, I just really want to join something. And I Googled his email address, and he turned out to be a belly button fetishist.
And I'm sorry, a what?
Like other students, a belly button fetishist.
Oh,
didn't admit it when I asked him what he was interested in, but I Googled his email address, and that's what turned up. And then I've also had, you know, male students turn out to be the most lovely, serious, enthusiastic students I've ever had. And so I would be so sad if I missed out on them. And if I had just done the basic research on everybody who came to me, you know, at least, you know, the male students who came to me, then, you know, I might not have felt like I could say yes to the folks who turned out to be really wonderful additions to our class community. So, you know, I think, so, you know, what are you in this for? What are you looking for? What are you hoping to get out of the class? Do you understand that, you know, some of your female students, you know, might be uncomfortable moving in this, learning to move in this way that's so unfamiliar? You know, are you aware of that? You know, are you willing to be aware of that? And, you know, the folks who respond in a way that feels appropriate, you know, always turn out to be really nice people.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's incredibly important. And I'm glad you brought that up, because it's true. You know, it's really not hard to pick out the people that are doing it, you know, with the best intentions and the ones that are doing it for the worst intentions. And that applies to both men and women. You know, the rotten eggs are really, the rotten eggs are easy to pick out, whether they're a guy or a girl, and it's not difficult. It may take a little bit of time, because they may be professional, professional scam artists, or, you know, really good at what they do. But it shows really quickly. And it shows with the students, if they feel comfortable, you know, if they do happen to get past you the first couple of times. So I definitely feel that it's, you know, it's a worthwhile investment. It's a worthwhile shot to have a male dancer, especially in, you know, in an art like this, where we don't come across many male dancers. And I've heard plenty of my colleagues say, I love having a male dancer because they teach me things that I didn't know about, you know, because they have access to, you know, a realm that I may not have access to or may not think to look into. And so I've heard my colleagues say, I think it's great. I think it's super important to have that, and a challenge too of how to educate a male dancer in a, you know, a female dancer dominated style. So I, for everyone listening, I think if you have a dancer in your future that identifies as male, I think it's important to, you know, of course, take precaution at first, find out what their intentions are, as with everyone, and to really give it a shot.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the proportion of male inquiries that have turned out to be creepy versus female students who have turned out to be not so healthy for the class have been really comparable.
Yeah. Yeah,
people are people.
Yeah, exactly. As I said, you know, bad things happen everywhere. It's not specific to one place. Is it going to happen in certain groups more than certain other groups? Sure. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's exclusive to that one, though.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we have been at this for an hour and 42 minutes, and I'm so interested
Yay.
In everything that we're saying, but I'm also a little bit concerned that we make sure we have enough time for questions and answers. So why don't I ask you just quickly, you know, is there anything else that teachers or event producers or anybody else in the community can do to, you know, make sure that male students and male performers really have access to our dance events, to our dance classes, et cetera?
Studying with male teachers, I think is important for teachers to do. You know, I know that I believe it's Muhammad Shaheen brings, you know, Tito Saif over to the U.S. I want to say at least twice a year now, from my own experience, like from seeing it. Because I know it's not always feasible to go over to Egypt or Turkey for people, you know. So being able to study with male dancers whenever you can to learn, you know, new tricks to the trade, see how they teach, you know, how they interact with other male dancers. You know, we also have Tariq Sultan in New York City, as well as Mark Belhaja in New York City, who does amazing Iraqi and peninsular dances. And I did have him in Philadelphia last year, and I had an absolute blast with him, and he's a fabulous teacher and also a fellow researcher. So studying with male teachers, also a really important aspect of having male dancers in the vicinity. Treating them like you would any other student. There is this understandable trend where when a male dancer gets on stage or dances in the class, they are like the highlight of the moment, of the class, of the night. Because of how limited access we have to male dancers. And that tends to, in my experience, create a little bit of an ego for male dancers. I remember when I was first started off dancing and I did my first, you know, show with around other dancers, and I got nothing but praise and, you know, no really solid feedback from other dancers. And I was really hoping for feedback, but I felt like there was this kind of like, oh, well, you're a male dancer, so you're just perfect no matter what. And I don't like that. I don't think that that's appropriate. I don't think that that's helpful, you know, for anyone. You know, male or female, man or woman. So I always encourage people who work with male dancers to be very honest with them and to treat them as if they were, you know, one of their own female colleagues, and to offer them, you know, advice and to offer them critique and to offer them compliments just as much as, you know, anyone else. And to put aside oh, look, the shining star in the group.
All right. Well, we're going to open it up for questions and answers in just a second. But before we do that, you know, if people want to learn more from you, how can they do that?
They are more than welcome to follow my Facebook group or my fan page, if you will. I leave that at strictly as dance. If they would like to follow me on my everyday Facebook group, they are more than welcome to. I do always let people know ahead of schedule I am a raging feminist, and my views may not be, my political views are present on my Facebook page. So it's always worth a shot. I mean, you may find out that we click and we may not. I don't blame anyone. So that's why I always offer my fan group or my fan page, because that is strictly dance, no politics. And they're also more than welcome to email me, which is RS, so R as in Roberto, S as in Sam, M as in Mary, EJIA at Verizon.net. You know, I have email on my computer, my phone. I take it with me everywhere. I love hearing from people, especially having done this. And, you know, other projects that I've worked on. So I welcome everyone to get in touch with me however they would like to. And, you know, let's talk.
Awesome. All right. So let's go ahead and open it up for questions and answers from our listeners. So if you'd like to ask a question, if you're listening on the webcast and your computer, you'll find a little question bubble on the right-hand side of your screen. If you click on that, you can... but if you are on the phone or Skype, you can press star. And if you're on Skype, that's star on your Skype keypad, not necessarily on your keyboard. I would love to hear some questions from our listeners. Or if you have anything that you'd like to share that was your favorite thing that you learned today, that would also be awesome. Looks like we've got a caller in Portland.
Hi, this is Shining. Can you hear me?
Hi, how are you?
Good. Hello. It's my first time on the call. I'm super excited to finally be, like, live listening. If I can, I wanted to offer maybe, like, an observation and an additional comment on some of the earlier commentary.
Go for it.
Okay. There is another male dancer on the West Coast here, but he travels internationally, named David of Scandinavia, who I've taken a workshop with when we brought him to Spokane, and I think he's fabulous and really intelligent, so it might be a good resource for people to reach out to if he's in your area. And then I wanted to just maybe say something about your... talking about the perception of men coming into the classroom situation and readdressing your own enculturation or enculturated views towards men in the classroom. I think what I realized when you said that was that in the U.S. at least, especially given all the rape cases and things we've been seeing in the media lately, there really is a very... overall view of looking at men as being a predator. And so if, you know, that can be brought up in classes and addressed to acknowledge the fact that not all men are predators, kind of like you were saying earlier, I just think maybe it's something valuable to realize is in the cultural mindset right now, however unfair it might be, and that it probably needs to be addressed when students or teachers might feel uncomfortable. That could be one of the reasons why. Just some my thought on what you had said there.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. You know, my own experiences with coming into new dance classes, you know, were fortunately always well received. But I don't personally give off the predatorial vibe. But I absolutely, you know, I absolutely know that there are plenty of men that do go in with wrong intentions. And that's why I always advocate for, you know, doing the research ahead of schedule on them, you know, really sitting down and talking with them. because it's completely understandable. And, you know, I, you know, even as a kid, I understood, you know, hey, you know, it's unfortunate. I don't get to dance, you know, with a teacher. I don't get to really expand my, you know, knowledge as I'd like to, but I fully understand that, you know, this is a safe space for people and, you know, for women in particular. You know, as I mentioned, I worked as a rape crisis counselor, and, you know, throughout college, once a month, I found out that one of my friends was assaulted. And so I would never, you know, expect a teacher to just, you know, kind of just let me in, you know, without first doing some screening, and for men in general. So I absolutely agree with you, Shining. And I'm really glad that you brought that up again, because I, you know, again, getting to know another culture, but also getting to know your own culture and getting to understand the mindsets of the people that you work with on a day-to-day basis. And I think that that's absolutely important. So thank you for bringing that up again.
Problem. I also had one more question for you, or a question. Is there a suggestion you might have about how to encourage men to enroll or become interested in dances from the Middle East? In this area in particular, I'm actually living in the Seattle region right now. There are, to my knowledge, maybe one or two dancers involved more in the tribal side that are male, but almost non-existent. And I know from watching some of the folk dance companies in, you know, Egypt and whatnot, that it would be really fantastic to have men who are willing to perform some of those dances. But there is a widespread idea that, well, men don't dance and I can't do that. And is there some suggestion you might have on how to encourage people to come into classes and to be interested in that, and, you know, and realize that it's not, that, you know, there are dances available to them that are not just for women?
Absolutely. Folkloric dances, you know, I hate to, excuse me, I hate to, you know, say, start off with that, but, you know, sometimes you have to work with what you have. And if that means, you know, offering the more masculine side of a dance or, you know, a particular country to get them in the class in the first place, you know, I'm not against it. Believe me.
Is there a way to do that as a, I mean, you might not know this personally, but as a woman not having access to male dancers, how do you even teach people that it's something they can do? Or, you know, something that a female dancer could offer them so that there eventually are more male dancers.
Yeah, just information sessions. I actually know quite a few of my my female colleagues who either teach or may, you know, learn with another teacher, and their spouses have ended up getting involved with dance. They tend to quit sooner than they would like. But I feel like, I think that does also come down to less of an emphasis on the folkloric and more on the Oriental side. And so, you know, presenting it to your students and saying, hey, you know, if your spouse or your partner or whomever would like to come in, you know, I would like to offer them this, you know, it's definitely not easy. Even as a male, you know, dancer, I've, you know, offered to work with other men, you know, privately, or to start up, you know, a class where they could come in, and it's just very difficult. So I hope you don't feel like you're alone, because you are absolutely not alone in that effort. But I definitely think that, you know, just really, you know, any opportunity that you have to sit down with someone and talk to them about it, you know, just being honest with them and saying, hey, look, you know, this is also a different aspect. You don't necessarily have to do the Oriental if you don't want to, but, you know, here's a really great, you know, dance that men do, like Debki. I mean, one of the greatest things that I've seen is in Philadelphia, we have two Middle Eastern nightclubs where a lot of Syrians and Lebanese and Palestinians come to, but it's also well populated by Hispanic groups, you know, Black American groups, and they will join in on the Debki lines. And so these groups of people that would never learn, especially men, would never learn this dance otherwise, are now familiar with, you know, with Debki and are amazing at it. And so just, you know, any opportunity to get to them and say, hey, you know, what about this? You know, have you considered this? Why don't we talk about that? You know, could be the difference between not having any men to come along and, you know, even having just one to start off.
Well, good ideas. I do want to add, you just reminded me, I feel pretty cool just because my husband, out of his own interest, came to a Debki class that we had here. He was like the only guy, but oh, he came to two of them.
Yeah. I think men are drawn more to the music. I know my own partner at the time, I ended up buying him a drum because he found himself more interested in the music and less in the dance. So it works out in the end. We get more musicians.
Well, thank you so much.
Absolutely, Shining. Thank you.
Thanks a bunch. All right. If anybody else would like to ask a question or share their favorite thing that they picked up on or any tips of their own, go ahead and press ** to unmute yourself.
Hi, Nadira.
Hi there.
Amina Barris, Minneapolis.
Amina, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Doing great.
Yeah, Roberto, this has been really, you have pushed so many buttons, okay? I mean, in a good way. I feel very sad that you ran into that kind of discrimination when you were trying to run into class or trying to take classes. I'm wondering if it's maybe a regional thing, because here in Minneapolis, that has not been the case.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter if that's not the case here. That's been your experience. One of my co-directors for my dance troupe is a man, and originally from the San Francisco area, studied with John Compton.
Mm-hmm.
He dances like John. Not that anybody could dance like John, but you can see the similarities. So there are a number of male dancers that I've had the good fortune to take classes from, study with, learn from. So maybe at some point, maybe we can hook up. Serkan Tutar is one of them. He's actually coming to Minneapolis in 2 months.
Yeah, I heard. That's so exciting. Congratulations.
Yeah, oh, man, we are just thrilled to death. But I think it's fabulous that you're talking about all these different subjects that normally, as a woman dancer, we're clueless, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're clueless. If I didn't live in the Minneapolis area, I would not have had male students come through my classes for 20 years. So,
yeah.
You know, my perspective is a little different, but I also understand that they all came here from somewhere else and ran into exactly the same thing you were talking about. So I think it's fabulous that you have persevered,
yeah,
and you followed your dream and you kept going, because there's only good that's going to come out of that for all the other male dancers that are out there.
Well, thank you. I mean, I really appreciate that. And, you know, I agree with you. You know, if it weren't for that rejection, you know, I love this so much. And when I was rejected constantly, you know, it just pushed me further. And it pushed me to when I was younger, I used to say to myself, one day I'm going to be, you know, proficient enough in this dance and my knowledge of it to be able to share with, you know, with the people around me that this is very normal for men to do. But also to educate, you know, to educate women that a lot of the, you know, in my experience, a lot of the, some of the reasons besides the concern for, you know, predatory, you know, a lot of like the predatory nature that, you know, men are taught that, you know, they have control of women's bodies and that women are not, you know, in control of themselves. That allowing men to become dancers also, as you said, you know, pushes buttons, pushes the envelope that men can do things that women do. And in the end, that ends up helping women, because when you think about it, like when I think about it, many of the insults hurled my way growing up compared me to women. And in doing so, not only was I viewed as lesser, but also my, you know, but also women were viewed as lesser, because I was being brought down to ultimately a woman's level. And, you know, I think in, you know, it's a micro change, but allowing men to engage in what is considered female dancing or women's dancing really pushes the envelope and allows, you know, our society to be like, look, like, you know, fine, gender and sex exist, but you can't be so rigid and you can't be so negative about it. And, you know, I feel that it really ultimately benefits everyone. You know, allows men to be more in touch with themselves and allows women to really, you know, be taken seriously, because they're not being, you know, hopefully one day they won't be used as a way to emasculate a man, you know, be like, oh, you know, you're such a pussy, or, you know, stop being such a girl, because that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, I always tell people, I'm like, I don't like using the word like, oh, you're such a pussy, you know, because, you know, I'm going to get PG, you know, PG-13 for a second, but, you know, you hit a man in his jewels, he's down, he's out, you know, and yet women create, you know, create children and give birth. That's not weak to me. So, you know, I think it's really important to, you know, I don't think people see it, but it ultimately changes a lot of things. And so it really helps everyone in the end.
No, I agree with you. And some of the other topics you talked on, kind of like, you know, the Zena and the Kuchik and the Tatib and the things like that. Honey, we need to talk because I got some research. And so
I would love to talk about research.
I sound like Artie here, don't I? I'm another Artie baby. So,
oh yes, I'm a fellow Artie. I'm a fellow Turkophile,
yeah,
so I'm with you.
Yeah. So,
for the folks who are listening, we're talking about Artemis Murat in DC.
Yeah.
Yes. Please, anyone listening that has not studied with her, please go study with her. She has so much information to give, especially on Turkish male dancers. And I believe, Amina, that she's going to be in Minneapolis with you in 2 months, correct?
Yep, it's her and Serkan and Rehan Tusus. So,
oh, fabulous.
Oh, we're having kittens over here. It's just,
yeah. Absolutely fabulous.
So come on out, everybody. We got a place for you to stay. So
perfect. Well, thank you so much, Amina. I appreciate
it. This is excellent. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
All right. We are so over time. We have any? So we.
Are we still there?
You still there?
Yes.
All right. I couldn't hear you for a few seconds. Do we want to offer one more question, or do we want to call it a night?
Sure. I mean, I'm open to you know, more questions.
All right. Well, last call. So if anybody wants to ask a question, you can press ** to unmute yourself. All right, then. I think we will call it a night. Thank you so much, Roberto.
Thank you, Nadir. I really appreciate this, and it was so much fun to get to talk to you and to, you know, to talk to everyone on such, you know, on a topic that I hold so close to my heart.
Absolutely. I wish we had more time. Maybe we'll have to do this again sometime.
That would be wonderful.
Awesome.
But I would like to ask if anyone would like to get in touch with me, you know, via my email, as I mentioned. My email is rsmejia, which is R as in Roberto, S as in Susan, M as in Mary, EJIA at Verizon.net. If you have any questions, if you're not the kind of person that likes to speak up in live events, I totally understand. Please feel free to email me with any questions or any feedback you wanted to give. I'm always open to receiving feedback. I love hearing what others thought or, you know, wish had been said differently or so on and so forth. So yeah, absolutely. Please feel free to get in touch.
Awesome. And we also have a private Facebook group just for Clubhouse members. So that would be another place where we can continue the discussion. I think you are in there, Roberto. Is that right?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. So if you are not shy about discussing things publicly, that's another option too. And again,
perfect.
That is private. So it's just for Clubhouse listeners. So if you haven't already joined our list, you can do that. I'll send you out an email with an invitation. And that email will also include a link to the recording. So if you're listening live and you want to hear this again, you can grab that again, as well as Roberto's Facebook page and some other places where you can find him. In that email, there will also be a link to our Clubhouse survey. So I'm always interested in some suggestions for topics, speakers, or other ways that I can improve the Clubhouse. So I would love to hear from you. Also, our next call is coming up on Monday, July 18th. My guest is going to be Sausan from California, who's going to be talking about the Egyptian dance code, which is her concept for understanding Egyptian Oriental dance. Also, a little bit of news from the belly dance geek world. I'm coming out of my spring sabbatical, and our next project is to offer Rock the Routine. This is my online course that runs over the course of the summer that teaches you about the six-part routine from the audience. The audience's expectations to traditional music choices and improvisation strategies. That's going to start on July 11th. And if you're interested, you can find the details at bellydancegeek.com/rock-the-routine. And the very last thing that I want to say is that this is the come on in kind of Clubhouse, not the no boys allowed kind. So if you know somebody who would like to join us, you can invite them to do so at bellydancegeek.com/clubhouse. And until next time, happy dancing. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. For more geektacular resources, check out bellydancegeek.com.